Welcome to this ABC Radio National podcast. For more on other enjoyable and informative programs, listen after the end for details. But right now, here's your podcast, which we hope you enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to Hindsight. I'm Michelle Rayner. Today we're heading to the NT to mark the 20th anniversary of a key moment in the history of Indigenous land sovereignty. There are three big tourist landmarks in the territory, two of them on the World Heritage List. They are Uluru, Kakadu, and Catherine Gorge, or Nitmaluk. One by one, under the Land Rights Act, they returned to Aboriginal ownership. And in all three cases, the opposition was fierce. Because Nitmaluk was the last of these to fall, in some ways the battle over it was more bitter and prolonged. And perhaps this was because it was only 28 kilometres from a town dominated by European interests for over 100 years. There were street rallies by a group called Rights for Whites. People were shot at, racist banners were posted, and angry words and punches were exchanged in the streets of Katherine. 20 years on from these events, Lorena Allam takes a look at the battle for Nitmaluk. And a warning for Aboriginal listeners, this program contains the voices of deceased people.
We're going to fight that land claim over the national park at the Catherine Gorge, and we're going to fight it just like we fought the Walbury land claim down the road.
What I'm saying to the feds is just keep your hands off the Catherine Gorge, because that is our lifeline here. That's the hub of tourism in the Northern Territory, in the top end, I would say. Now, if you take that away from...
Many people have worried that the Gowan were trying to take the gorge away. I don't know why we were supposed to take it, but that's what they said. As you can see, it's still there.
The only course left to us now is to make such a noise, so long and so loud, that our politicians will be forced to do the will of the people.
Land right is not about arguments and disagreement. It is about Aborigines and non-Aborigines working together to build the future. All of us just about the same things. We want our lives to be happy and prosperous.
Their voices, you know, still ring in our ears. Some of us that was growing up telling us our dreams are your dreams. Your dreams are your children's dreams. And then that's what we've, you know, been pushing for this last 20 years.
While you are here on our country, take time to look around you. Take time to understand the beauty of this place and that of all Jawin country. And take time to listen to the words of our elders about this place called Nitmaluk. Once again, we are able to care for our country, not as Taran Nullius or an empty land, not as an untamed wilderness, but as part of a living heritage that forms a basis for economic and social independence for our people. Thank you and welcome.
If I could pay my respects to the traditional owners, the Jawin people, for this very, very significant and very, very happy celebration. It is a celebration of great achievement. And for that, each and every one of you who have been involved for every single day of the last 20 years should be congratulated.
This year, the Jawun people celebrated a milestone in the modern history of their nation. It's 20 years since they regained ownership of the spectacularly beautiful Katherine Gorge. Jawun people call Katherine Gorge Nitmaluk. The name was given by the creator, Nabalil. As he travelled through the country, he heard the song of the cicada crying nip, nip, nip. The speeches you just heard were from the 20th anniversary celebrations held at the gorge earlier in the year. In fact, a lot of speeches were made in the long and ugly battle over Nitmaluk. It was a battle that tested the patience, the peace, and the racial bedrock of the township of Katherine, 3 hours south of Darwin.
Good evening. In Katherine last Monday, more than 1,000 people attended a meeting called to discuss opposition to Aboriginal land rights. The ABC's Darwin newsroom sent a reporter and technical crew to Katherine to place the meeting on videotape. In view of the tremendous response to that meeting, it's been decided to show an unedited version of the speeches made there.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this meeting has been called to discuss, I suppose, discriminatory legislation in favour of a certain class of people.
We're going to fight that land claim over the national park at the Katherine Gorge, and we're going to fight it just like we fought the Walbury land claim down the road. Now, the fact of the matter is that Aboriginal Land Rights Act is passed, as he said, 18 months ago. That doesn't mean to say that we accept every claim that comes along. Of course we fight the ones that we think we should fight. And we fought them. And we fought the Kakadu.
I say that racism is the direct result of discriminatory policies adopted by politicians and professional blackfellows, aided and abetted by the media, and not excluding the ABC.
It's been claimed all over Australia that possibly we're racist here in Katherine. I don't think that we are. We prove that we can live in peace with the Aborigines and work with them. I think the people that are causing the trouble are the federal government and the Aboriginal Land Council. And what I'm saying to the feds is just keep your hands off the Katherine Gorge, because that is our lifeline here. That's the hub of tourism in the Northern Territory, in the top end, I would say. Now, if you take that away from here, you'd need a permit to go into the gorge. Now, you try and get 80,000 permits. It's impossible. It's impossible almost to get one permit to go into these Aboriginal grounds. If this bill that they introduced had been for the whole of Australia, I wouldn't have said anything. But it wasn't. It was Aboriginal Land Rights Northern Territory. In other words, give it away, fellas. We don't care about them. Well, I say we've got to have a stay. And we're going to have a say. Anyway, I'll hand over. And I will repeat, ladies and gentlemen, I am not a racist.
We have to tell the people in the South what is happening and how we're being discriminated against in the Northern Territory. We were accused of not knowing the feelings of the people in our communities. I think this meeting today will disprove that. We do know the feeling of the people. We were then attacked as not knowing the facts. And now the latest ones that are coming along is that we're racist. That's right. They can't find anything else. They're going to nitpick. They're going to say some of this legislation hasn't gone through. Some of this legislation is only in claim forms. It's not all going to be accepted. But unless we fight it, how do we know it's not going to be accepted? The only course left to us now is to make such a noise, so long and so loud that our politicians will be forced to do the will of the people.
That's the Rights for Whites rally in Katherine in 1979, televised in full by the ABC. Over 1,000 people turned up for that rally, but there were others as well. A year before it, in 1978, the Jawun lodged a land claim over an area including Katherine Gorge National Park and the town's water supply. Locals referred to the gorge as the third jewel in the crown of territory tourism. They thought the land claim meant they'd lose access to this major landmark and all the tourist dollars that came with it. The Jawun claim was over land to the east and northeast of Katherine. At the same time, Aboriginal people were making claims over other territory towns, like the Warramungu claim at Tennant Creek and the Larrakia claim near Darwin. Local whites were very nervous. Under the Land Rights Act, Aboriginal people could only claim unalienated Crown land. So the territory government sought to alienate the land by radically extending the town boundaries of Darwin, Katherine and Tennant Creek, which stymied the land claims and caused a stir at the time. This is what Labor opposition leader John Isaacs had to say about it.
The boundary of Darwin and the other towns were extended for one purpose, in my view, that is to thwart Aboriginal land claims.
Have you got any proof of that?
Well, you only have to look at the size of Darwin and Katherine now. Under the planning boundaries, they're towns in excess of 4,500 square kilometres, greater than the size of London. There's no justification on planning grounds for that. I believe it was done for one particular purpose, that is, to thwart the land claims over the areas.
By alienating them?
Yes, the land was previously unalienated Crown land and therefore able to be subject to the Lands Act, Aboriginal Land Rights Act. Now they're not so subject because the land is now alienated.
It took 5 years of battles in the Federal and then the High Court to force the Northern Territory government to rescind its decision. But it eventually reduced the size of the town boundaries of Katherine, and hearings on the Jawun claim began in 1981. Opposition to the claim was fierce. The late Paul Lynham travelled to Katherine with the Prime Minister, Bob Hawke, and reported for the ABC at the time.
It's an impressive place, a major tourist attraction and the source of the town's water. And many of Katherine's whites are angered at the likely prospect of the gorge under Aboriginal ownership, even though it would be immediately leased back to the Commonwealth.
It should be protected for all Australians, not just the Aboriginal people. I know they've got affinity with it, but so have a lot of white Australians as well.
Do you think the Aboriginal people get a rough trot out this way?
No, I don't think so. I think they're reasonably well looked after.
Same opportunities as whites, do you think?
Yes, I'd say even more opportunities than whites in some areas.
Why do you think then there seems to be a bit of a difference in their living standards?
Well, because a lot of times they choose to live that way. Not because they're forced to, it's because they choose to.
This was more than a couple of disgruntled locals talking in the street. The One Nation, One Law Committee was formed, popularly called Rights for Whites, and it raised over $80,000 to fund its protests.
It is well to remember, ladies and gentlemen, that 30 years ago, the total Aboriginal population of the Northern Territory was completely unsophisticated. There were few schools and little contact with the outside world.
That's Les McFarlane. He held a lot of authority in the Katherine area. He was a cattleman with a big property called Moroke. But more importantly, he was the local member for ELSI in the Territory Parliament for 16 years, and he was the Speaker of the House for 8 years. McFarlane caused a stir when he posted anti-land rights cartoons outside his electorate office. One image showed a black-skinned man riding a white man on all fours across the map of the Northern Territory. Other members of Parliament objected. One likened the cartoons to Nazi-style propaganda. But Les McFarlane had many supporters too. Here he is chairing a Rights for Whites rally in Katherine.
I say that progress by the Aboriginal has been remarkable, despite the alcohol problem and other problems. and this progress has been achieved despite Canberra. I say further, ladies and gentlemen, that no real progress will come to the Northern Territory until Canberra gets the hell out of the road and allows your democratically elected representatives to get on with the job you elected them to do. I say that the main trouble today is caused by politicians in the populous states who, having exterminated Aboriginals down there, are making the Northern Territory the collective conscience for the rest of Australia. I protest on your behalf, in the strongest possible terms, that decisions affecting only the Northern Territory, such as land rights and the recent uranium bill, are being made by politicians and public servants in Canberra without heed for local opinion.
Jawoyn people were warned to stay out of town on the days when the Rights for Whites rallied. They quietly went about compiling all the necessary information for the land claim hearings. Even so, two senior claimants had shots fired over their heads after a day of giving evidence about sacred Jawoyn sites outside Katherine. In the meantime, their representatives from the Northern Land Council, or NLC, bravely took on the job of speaking directly with the people of Katherine. NLC manager Alex Bishaw spoke to a Rights for Whites rally.
Now, the next speaker is Mr. Alex Bishaw, the manager of the Northern Land Council. Now, Alex is not a stranger to this town. He's lived here for 7.5 years a few years ago. And he can give you his opinion of what's doing. Now, I ask that you observe the courtesies for which Katherine is famous, and you hear him in silence.
Well, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen and friends, those people that I've known here for many years, I'd like to very quickly give you my viewpoint of where we're at, because it seems to me that it's right and proper you should have that understanding. There's some basic mistakes in what is being said. Now, in the Kakadu National Park, which land became Aboriginal land and which land is being leased back to you people for 100 years, which is being leased back for 100 years, and I repeat, at a peppercorn rental, there will be permits required to go in at the gate, and they will be the exact same permit as required up here. That is, 50 cents if you're going to be in there for a day, and a dollar if you're going to be in there for 2 days or more, or require camping facilities. Now, let me say, you cannot alter the fact. You need to live with it. And like us all, we need to live with it. It has been said to me that the chairman of the Northern Land Council has been making public statements as to his people's intention to do horrible things like locking up the park. I say to you that the actual evidence points all the other way. That in fact, having got an intimation that they could have kept that land for themselves, they decided it was right to share it with the other citizens of Katherine and of this territory. Well, that happens to be a fact. I think that happens to be a fact. If I'm a liar, I'll come down here one day and shout you all a beer. Now, how about that? Mr. Chairman, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Bishaw. Your next speaker, ladies and gentlemen.
Manager of the Northern Land Council, Alex Bishaw, speaking to a Rights for Whites rally in Katherine in 1979. The Aboriginal Land Commissioner, Justice Carney, heard the Jawoyn claim. After years of hearings, 800 pages of submissions, Almost 5,000 pages of transcripts and more than 200 exhibits, Justice Carney handed his report to the federal government in 1988. Carney was well aware of local fears about the loss of Katherine Gorge. In his final report, he writes,
"It is desirable to say two things at the outset, because the fact that the claim included the park aroused the strongest opposition by many people, based on genuine and deeply held values and beliefs. First, the park is one of the great natural wonders of Australia and a priceless heritage for future generations of mankind. It is unthinkable that it should cease to be a national park, open to all Australians and to all visitors from around the world. If there were the slightest chance that the grant of this claim would put at risk the status of the park or access to the park by every citizen, I would comment in the strongest terms on the detriment which would follow if a grant were made. Second, at every stage during this long inquiry, the claimants have steadfastly maintained that if their claim is granted, the park will remain as a national park. They have given a complete, full, and unequivocal assurance. It should be treated as such, it should be acted upon as such, and it should be enforced as such."
Justice Carney recommended the Jawoyn claim be approved, and the matter then lay with the Federal Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Gerry Hand. The Territory Government knew the Jawoyn had promised to lease their land back to the Federal Government as a national park in exchange for a joint management arrangement. Ever since the advent of self-government in 1976, the Territory had been resentful about the Fed's interference in Territory affairs, and it absolutely did not want Nitmaluk under federal management. So it began to negotiate directly with the Jawoyn leadership, who also had some clear ideas about what they wanted from the deal.
The setting of this morning's meeting, a tin shed at Rockhole Camp on the outskirts of Katherine, gave little indication of the importance of the occasion. In 40-degree heat amid the flies, Jawoyn Aborigines arrived from the surrounding districts to discuss one of the Territory's potentially most divisive issues. Steve Hatton was out to secure Conservation Commission management of the gorge and a guarantee of water supplies for Katherine. The talks went on for an hour before both parties fronted the large contingent of media.
"I feel optimistic that we can resolve the matters. I think there's goodwill on both parts, and that's a good start for any discussions."
"Well, we'd like to be involved with the running of the gorge, and that's our main concern. We'd like to see Aboriginal people employed by them. Rangers and be involved more with the Katherine Gorge."
It took 18 months of patient negotiation, but the Jawoyn and the Northern Territory government agreed to jointly manage the gorge as a territory concern. Nitmaluk National Park.
"At this present time, the young kids have made way to the centre arena here, where they will dance before some 200-300 people have gathered here, and there's still a lot of people still coming through the car parks to witness this event."
That's the late pioneer Aboriginal broadcaster Echo Cole at the ABC's live broadcast of the Nitmaluk handback ceremony in 1989.
"Led by mothers, uncles, aunties and support from their community. They're going behind the centre stage, a lot of dust flying. Some 30-odd young kids put on the performance.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today to present to the Jawoyn people the title deeds to your traditional country. Traditional owners, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Commonwealth Government and the people of Australia, I'm proud to present these title deeds to the Jawoyn people.
Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, Gerry Hand. Chief Minister, Marsha Perrin, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of my countrymen, the Jawoyn people, I would like to welcome you all to this historic occasion. It is a day our people have been looking forward to for many years. For us, it is a day of great happiness. as well as happiness for my people, I hope it will also be a day that will mark a new beginning for the people of Catherine. To those people of Catherine who have come, I would like to give a special welcome.
Geoffrey MacDonald from the Jawun Association, extending the olive branch to local people at the Nitmuluk handback ceremony. By far the most moving speech of the many made that day came from senior traditional owner and first chair of the Nitmuluk Board of Management, Ray Fortimer.
We all know this has not been an easy time here in Catherine over the last 10 years. Many people have worried that the Jawun were trying to take the gorge away. I don't know why we were supposed to take it, but that's what they said. As you can see, it's still there. Many people have worried about the water supply and said that the Jawun people will stop the water. We know everyone has to drink, so we have always said that water supply was safe and have signed an agreement to ensure this. Maybe come wet season time, you'll wish we had stopped the water. So there's been a lot of worry, even though we have always said the park would be available for park right from the start. This is what today is all about. It has been hard for us Jawun people as well. We have always known this land belongs to us and that we belong to it. That is our law. We are here today. We have our land back and we have this piece of paper that tells the world that this is Jawun country. But we can't live on a piece of paper. Paper is a wonderful thing and means nothing unless there is respect for our people and for country. It means nothing unless there is a future. And we believe now every future here at Nitmuluk. Look around you. This is not a piece of paper. This is the land, the trees, the animals, the fish, and the waters. It is the wind and the rain. It is something that was put here for us in the dreaming and was put here for Jawun people to look after. We had to go through a long land claim hearing, telling everything about our country to a judge and to a lot of lawyers. And I can tell you, over the years, we have seen more lawyers than most people can have hot dinners. But most of all, it has been hard because of the waiting and all the arguments that have gone on over the years. Over the time, many of our people have died just waiting for this day. This has made us very sad because it was these old people who brought us into this world and who worked hard over the years to try and get the land back. We will always remember them. Over the years, people have tried to make trouble and keep this fighting going. But today is about stopping all that. Today is about the theme we have chosen, sharing our country. Mamgun Mungwiwun Lerinyaran. Land rights is not about arguments and disagreement. It is about Aborigines and non-Aborigines working together to build the future. All of us just about the same things. We want our lives to be happy and prosperous. We want to leave something for our children and grandchildren. We have to work together to make sure that our hopes and dreams come true. Thank you.
That was Ray Fortimer, traditional owner of the Jawun clan.
You're listening to Hindsight on ABC Radio National with me, Lorena Allen. Today's program is called The Third Jewel, about 20 years of Jawun ownership of Nitmuluk, or Catherine Gorge, in the Northern Territory.
The Jawun Association has the majority on the Board of Management. It's pushed for Aboriginal employment at the park. There are now 10 Aboriginal rangers.
You can go up in the ladder. You don't have to stay as a tier one. You can work your way up. You can better yourself as the year goes on.
The association owns a half share in all tour operations in the park. But not everyone. It's been 20 years now since the Jawoyn won their land back. In that time, they've become an economic force in the territory. They've won tourism awards, become a major local employer, and are involved in land management activities across their traditional estates from Nitmaluk to Kakadu and Arnhem Land. The Jawoyn are treading a fine line between developing their resources and protecting their culture. They hope for economic independence within 5 years. Despite that, some things are not for sale.
There's no way that any Aboriginal people will sit down with any government or any mining company about our sacrifice. It's there for us.
Wes Miller is the current CEO of the Jawoyn Association. He's inherited a strong economic foundation from his elders, the senior traditional owners who fought the land claim.
In 89, we weren't involved in any commercial operations in the Gorge. We set up a tourism arm, Nibbluk Tours, and in 93 went into a joint venture arrangement with 25% equity. In December 2005... we paid out the joint venture and we took over the whole thing lock, stock and barrel. We had to spend a lot of money upgrading the infrastructure out there because under the joint venture arrangement the assets were allowed to be run down. We've lobbied the NT government and the federal government and we've brought them into the picture and they've brought in a lot of infrastructure money. Both the Northern Territory Government with the walking trail from the first to the second gorge, now with the infrastructure upgrade on the power, water and sewage, which they're about to start now. Through the Commonwealth, we were able to buy out the joint venture, put in a resort pool, build cabins. We also put in a new Nipmuc Centre, 97. So the place now is far different to what it was 20 years ago. Even the operation's different. We've introduced catered cruisers. We've chopped and changed some of the boat times. So it's a very different place, and it's also 20 years of joint management of the park with the Parks and Wildlife Service. And Jawoyn are majority on the management board. So we've been able to balance the economic, commercial reality of the operation with maintaining the cultural and environmental aspects of the park as well. Sometimes that requires a lot of negotiation, other times it's easy. The doubters that we had back then should come and have a look at us now and they might change their minds because none of those things that they threatened we'd do happened. And I'm sure that we were a bit nervous too 20 years ago about what sort of a job we were going to do, but I think there were some very strong Jawoyn people around that stage who were determined to make sure that we were going to be successful. They were the driving force, and this, in a sense, through their vision, is still what's driving me and Preston and the other guys at the Association and through Nipmuc Tours as well. They're still pushing us from behind to make sure that we don't fail.
Wes Miller. Those elders are gone now, and it's their children who are taking up the decision-making for the Jawoyn. Jane Fortemile was just a little girl when the land claim was going on, but she well remembers how it affected her father and his legacy to his children.
Yeah, it was really serious for them. You know, they used to growl us, tell us to sit down and listen. You know, we'd listen to them, but still, you know, play around the sideline. Their voices, you know, still ring in our ears. Some of us that was growing up, you know, their voices still ringing in our ears, you know, telling us, you know, behave. You know, our dreams are your dreams. Your dreams are your children's dreams. And that's what been pushing for this last 20 years is their vision. My strongest memory of my dad was when... is how he used to stand up strong. He used to have a strong voice. You know, people used to listen to him. You know, he used to speak up really clearly, really strongly, you know, to try and get things moving, get things happening. I remember that one time there where he went and told his younger brother, or Bangari Lee, you know, to start helping him, stop, you know, drinking and carrying on. You got to help me. I can't stand alone. I need some backup. And there was one time there when they were sitting at home there, and the old man Bangari Lee come there now. And that's what he said to him there, to help me. And then, you know, when old man was starting to get sick now, he stood up and he said, "Oh, well, brother, you know, I can see where you're going. I'll back you up. I'll be your right hand man." So that's when, you know, Daddy Bangari or Mr. Lee been carry on from where even Lee, you know, left off. You know, with the two brothers standing up strong, made things happen for us, made a pathway for us, you know, the second generation. And now, you know, we're making a pathway for the third generation.
With the regional dance group 20 years ago, when he came back, just a mob never come. What Kokoroo? His first dance.
The White Cockatoo Dancers, the very same group who performed as children at the handback of Nitmaluk 20 years ago. Ryan Barraway is the grandson of one of the main traditional owners. He's also the chairman of the Jawan Association.
20 years ago, I was here since the handback. I was doing dancing with one of the dancers as well, like doing cobbery. And yeah, I was part of that. Not older now. But, yeah, 20 years since joint management. We got the park back. It's a very proud day today. And it gives us opportunity to be in control of our own land and destiny. It is important for young people to grow up and to teach young kids this is their land, and they're the future. We need to teach them that, you know, help look after country, and that we, our people, had a vision, and their vision was to get the land back for the future generation. Next 20 years, I'll be, you know, out on country, looking after land and showing young people what them elders showed me.
Yes, my name is Lisa Mumbin. Former chair of the Jawan Association, but a chairperson of the Nitmaluk Parks Board of Management. As I was 8 years old and could remember a lot of the things that were happening around me, didn't take much interest of it then, because, you know, when you're young, you just like to be, you're in your own age group and just want to play and do your own things. But as years went by and got a little bit older, I could remember there were some strong talks, you know, just sitting down watching a lot of the elders attending many meetings and experiencing a lot of the comments that were made at the time were very strong and powerful, I could remember. And yeah, and that's when I actually started really watching my elders on every move they went towards fighting for the land. I was watching actually my brother, Mr. 40 Mile, when he went up and done his speech. Most of the words that he spoke were really, you know, went straight into my heart, and that's the only reason that kind of made me more and wanting me more to be involved and doing something for my people. And I have, yes.
Lisa Mumbin, chair of the Nitmaluk Park Board of Management. The Jawan have some serious long-term goals, and they have the corporate language as well. Where's Miller?
Well, we have a commercial development plan, which is 20 years. We're about 3-4 years into that plan. There are plans to link up Kakadu with Nitmaluk National Park with a walking trail. It'll be one of the longest walking trails in the world, over 300 kilometres. We want to develop some sort of luxury resort at the Gorge, because there's a market there that we're not tapping into, which is the high end of the tourism market. Better trails. We're going to realign the Japala Trail to make that even more spectacular. And the numbers there have increased 35% this year and rising, so it's becoming one of the great walks. And I believe that you've got to now book about 3 months ahead to get on it. After that, we have talked to some of the big bus companies about setting up safari-type camping somewhere in the gorge. So we'll be pursuing that. And then after that, I think there'll be a period of consolidation where we pull up and just make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can. And then again, it'll depend very much on the market itself, what direction tourism goes into, what are seen as the end thing. So we'll shape our development over the next 5 to 10 years based on market research, based on travelling over and networking with wholesalers through our European market, which is our strongest market. But just recently we went to a trade show in Indonesia, so we are now, over the next 5 to 10 years, looking at the Asian market. So I think in 10 years, and certainly in 20 years' time, I think the Asian tourist sector will be quite large. In fact, it'll probably be the biggest sector in the next 20 years.
If we could keep together strongly, I mean, there's a lot of distractions I see now that, you know, that I feel worried about. But I know Jawan has always been strong, and I really don't. I'm not that kind of person that read future, but I would like to see that Jawan is still going strong with economic development, you know, more tourism venture happening with our, in our traditional land, and especially importantly, our people are running our businesses. That's what I like to see. And nothing's going to be perfect, Rosie. You know, you're going to face hard times along the way. And I've been through there, and I'm still experiencing difficulty as a leader. Stay strong.
We're very mindful of those things. That's why we think if we can get into the Asian market, they're much closer to us. I think the European market has been very good for Nitmaluk tours, but we can't rely on that because they're a long way away, and there's a lot of other competition between Europe and us. So to try and minimise that risk, we do, I think, need to get into the Asian market. But at the same time, we are looking at other things as well. I think we can't rely on tourism totally, as good as it has been. But the market could go down. We can't put all our eggs in that basket. We are looking at other things, whether it's mining, whether it's agriculture, whether it's real estate. But we have to branch out, and in 20 years' time, I think the Jowan Association will look very different to what it is today, because we have to now broaden our horizons in terms of economic opportunities.
A couple of months ago, the Jowan and their supporters celebrated 20 years of Jowan's success. More speeches were made. But perhaps the last word belonged to long-time Territory Labor politician Warren Snowden, now the Federal Minister for Indigenous Health. To the consternation of some at the anniversary, Snowden neatly summarised the struggles of the last two decades.
And one of the things we're celebrating today is the success of the Jowan community. The success of the joint management of the park. But I think more significantly, in a way, we're celebrating an era of great change. You see, I remember in 1978, when the land claim was lodged. I remember 1981 and 82, when Justice Carney had the hearings. I remember when non-Aboriginal people in this town thought they were good enough to be able to describe Aboriginal people in racist and derogatory terms, where the local CLP member could have racist and derogatory signs and cartoons on his window of his office. See, I remember it. And I remember driving up this road to this park with some school children from Darwin. We were going down to visit Barunga. Aboriginal kids, some of whom were ultimately to be termed as part of traditional owners of this park. And as we were driving up this road, there were signs for the rights for whites. Insulting, derogatory, racist signs. It's ugly. And it was very ugly. Aboriginal people were stigmatised, demonised, insulted, simply because they were trying to exercise their rights as Australia's First Peoples, simply because they were trying to exercise their rights to claim their land under the Northern Territory Land Rights Act, which passed through the Federal Parliament in 1976. Now, I started off by saying this was a celebration. And the celebration of the recognition of what the Jowan have achieved. But I think more significantly in many respects is the celebration of change. The way attitudes have changed in this community towards the success of the Jowan venture, to understanding the importance and integrated importance of the Jowan in the community life here in Katherine. Thank you.
The Battle for Nipmuluk was produced by Lorena Allam and the sound engineer was Mark Don. Special thanks to our Nipmuluk correspondent, Chips McAnulty. And thanks also to John Spence from ABC Archives. To view a gallery of images from the Nitmaluk anniversary celebrations, go to our website. That's abc.net.au/rn/hindsight. And next week on the program, the first in our special summer season of biography features.
Dear mate, every letter I write just now must be so patchy that I can't give you any idea of what life is really for me. I went to church with us all this morning, and then to an afternoon tea to meet the Mawson Antarctica expedition people. There were some fine fellows amongst them. There was Morton Moyes, who used to come over here from Adelaide and do the high jump. He has been surveying in North Queensland. They say his jump will be handy for crevasses.
On Friday, I went to the Coliseum to see Sarah Bernhardt, but it wasn't impressive. She was playing the part of a girl and moved about like an old woman when she moved at all. You felt sorry that she should be there at all, and in the very air there was the knowledge that people had all come so they could tell their children they had seen her.
Don't be alarmed at all the things addressed in my handwriting by this mail. Grandmother has made you a scarf. She made a pair of what she calls pulse warmers for you too. She wanted to make them in grey, which is more gentlemanly than white, but the grey wool tired her eyes.
One of the interesting things is the usage of the word mate that comes up a lot in the letters of both, mate or matey, or my best mate, my close mate. Sometimes it's being used perhaps in almost a double sense, like the mate as soulmate, and then the mate as in Australian mateship.
When I encountered their use of the word mate in the correspondence, I interpreted it as a way in which each of them signalled their attachment to that Australian vernacular tradition. As William Lane, the great Queensland socialist, had put it, remember that Vance is a Queenslander and would later write a play about William Lane, who is best known, of course, for starting a socialist colony in Paraguay called New Australia in 1893. You know, Lane had famously defined socialism as the desire to be mates, and I guess I see Nettie and Vance as attracted to that ideal. To me, they're always negotiating boundaries between classes, boundaries between the high culture that Nettie, you know, is so comfortable with, but also the more popular forms of national expression that we'd associate with, you know, bush balladry and so on. Perhaps also signalling their attachment to the idea that the egalitarianism of the Australian tradition could extend to relations between men and women and to, well, a man and a woman who would, you know, eventually marry.
Most of the scholarship on Vance and Nettie Palmer was done in the late 1960s, the early 1970s. Vance died in 1959 and Nettie died in 1964. So most of the historical and biographical work was done then. And, of course, in the 1970s, there was still a resonance about exploring the intimate relationship between people, or the intimate archive, as we now call it. The biographers there often say they feel that their great failure is to open up this relationship between Vance and Nettie, which is a profound love story.
April the 14th. 1914. Nettie sails to London.
Mate of mine, do you remember those days nearly 4 years ago when you were in England and I was coming and we didn't know what was going to happen when we met? Mate, it's been a long while since then, but a glow still shines about you, a more miraculous glow than ever. Kiss me a moment, dear, and let me feel your hair upon my face. I'm happy, 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 mate of mine. I've wanted you more passionately than I could ever tell you. Your man.
Oh, you, my wonder, my lover, my mate.
From the Australian realist writers Vance and Nettie Palmer to the Aboriginal mediator Truganini, these features explore anew the lives of people we think we know and others who've been forgotten. Look forward to your company next week on Hindsight here on ABC Radio National.
Is it a mistake to link migration and study? How big can Australia's education industry get?
Given the scale of international education,
even small rates of growth will see quite significant increases in the number of international students.
The problems with education for export. In the National Interest with me, Peter Mayers. Download or stream this program from the Radio National website.